Matthew, the 10th chapter, through 39. It reads, "Everyone, therefore, who shall confess me before men, I will also confess him before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever shall deny me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be the members of his household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life shall lose it, and he who has lost his life for my sake shall find it."
We have some folks who are not able to be with us today. You may see some holes in the auditorium. We've got a large group of our young folks and chaperones that are at Gunnersville at the regular youth retreat. Because of that, if we've got any teens in the audience, the teen class will not be meeting this morning, and because all your teachers are in Alabama. And so if you would just find a good other class, adult class, they would love to have you join them this morning. I know that also our deaf group is gone this morning, so you'll see even a bigger gap over in this area. They've got a big get-together this weekend. I want to say it's in Nashville, and so they'll be back with us next week. Our family, one of the channels we've watched over the years is the Animal Planet channel. We like animals and critters at our household. And one of the shows that you might see on there from time to time is a show called It's Me or the Dog. Haven't watched it tons, but basically what it is it's a show in which you've got this lady who's a trainer, and they have families who have problem pets, problem dogs. And these dogs have discipline problems, behavior problems, and what has happened is it has become an issue in the home. You know, sometimes pets, can become problems in family members. Maybe you've got one family member that likes the pet better than the other family member does, or maybe one of you had a dog before you got married, and then it becomes an issue after you get married. And so playing on those problems that arise sometimes in families because of pets, or in this case because of dogs, they titled the show It's Me or the Dog. In other words, yeah, fix this dog, get rid of this dog, or I'm leaving. As you think about that, really that song, that particular show is playing on a choice. And as we think about that, I want us to focus today on Matthew chapter 10, where God, Christ, are challenging us to make a choice. It's either Him or. And as we think about the choice that we make when we become Christians, if you're visiting with us, we're focusing on revival in Christ. What is it that Jesus teaches us? What is it we are revived concerning? Or what do we learn anew through Christ, through His life, His death, His resurrection, and His ongoing ministry that applies to our lives? And so as we focus today on Matthew chapter 10, I want us to think about it's me or. As we think about that, we're going to use the letter C as our memory glue as we talk about confession, confrontation, and crucifixion. Confession, confrontation, and crucifixion. Before we talk about Matthew chapter 10, verses 32 through 39, I kind of want to see what Jesus has been doing in the early parts of that chapter. Jesus is sending out the 12 apostles. In fact, the word apostle means one who is sent. And so He's sending them out to different villages throughout Judea to tell them about the coming kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. And as He sends them out, He tells them, don't really take any money and so forth for your journey, because He says a workman is worthy of your hire, and trust that when you get into these villages, they'll take care of you. And when you find a home that'll take you in, you stay there. You find a family that'll feed you, you stay with them. If not, He says, you wipe the dust, shake the dust off your feet, and you move on to another town. And that was a common thing that they did to show their disdain and disgust of those who rejected what was right. And so that's what they were to do as they went from village to village. And notice what he says starting in verse 16. He says, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. In other words, he says, the task I'm giving you is a difficult task. It's going to involve danger. It's going to involve sacrifice. And then he begins to describe some of the things that are going to happen to them. They're going to be put on trial. They're going to be scourged or beaten. They are going to be thrown into prison. They're going to be taken before governors and kings. And it's interesting as you think about that description, all of those things are things that happened to Jesus Christ. And so he says, basically, the religious powers are going to turn against you. The political powers are going to turn against you. And even some members of your own families are going to turn against you. So I want you to understand what you're getting into before you get into it. But he then tells them that they shouldn't be surprised at this. He goes on to say that no servant is above his master, and no student is above his teacher. He emphasized the fact in verse 24 that they shouldn't expect anything different, because that's exactly how Jesus was and would be treated. That the religious powers, the political powers would turn against him, and yes, even he would struggle with belief in his own family. And so what he's basically saying is, if they called the Son of God the devil, and you may recall how that when Jesus would perform miracles and cast out demons, some of his opponents said, oh, he did it by the power of the devil. He was able to throw out devils because he's one of them. And so Jesus says, basically, if they made those kind of accusations toward the Son of God, the Master, then should you as the followers or the students expect anything different? Basically what he's saying is, what I'm telling you is going to happen is just status quo. It's just par for the course. It's just what goes with following the Son of God. And then having said that, he wants to give them some courage and some hope. And you notice three times in that section following, he says, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Do not fear them. Don't fear those who are going to put you on trial, or don't fear those who are going to throw you in prison. Don't fear those who are going to beat you and scourge you. And he says, because the things they do in secret are one day going to be revealed. And that if God notices a single sparrow when it dies, don't you think God will notice when people are hurting in His name? And so what he's emphasizing is trust. Do not fear. He's letting them know that the Christian life is not a life that's lived on the flat, comfortable ground, but it's a life that's lived on the side of the cliff. That it's like a rock climber who must trust his hands and his feet and his equipment to come up to the side of that cliff, up the side of that mountain. So it is that as we live the Christian life, we've got to put our trust in God. He says, it's not going to be easy, but I am with you, so I need you to trust me completely. Then in the section that we're looking at, starting in verse 32, it begins with the word, therefore. And remember, the therefore is always there for a reason. And what it's trying to do is connect what's about to be said to what has just been said. In other words, based on the fact that living for Christ is not going to be easy, based on the fact that you are going to have opponents, based on the fact that you might be put on trial, beaten and put in prison, and maybe even give up your lives, and also based on the fact that God is with you and that you should not be afraid, even though you're going to face those things, he then has three areas of comparison in which he wants to challenge them to make a choice. He's basically saying, it's me or. Starting in verse 32, he says, but whoever denies me before men, I will also deny him before my Father who is in heaven. I want us to think about in our lives whether Christ is more important than what other people think about us. That's what Jesus is challenging them to think about. He says, I will openly confess before the Father, and the other Gospels actually include the angels, But I will openly confess before the Father and the angels in heaven that you are my people. If you will be willing to openly confess before the world that I am your master and your Lord. Now that's going to take courage on their part, because remember, he's just described the kinds of things that happen to those who try to follow him and make a difference in the world in his name. Remember, the political powers, the religious powers, and your own families may turn against you. They may beat you, put you on trial, put you in prison, take your life. And so when a person is about to confess, I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God, it takes on a new meaning against that background. In other words, he's saying, I want you to understand that if you tell people you believe in me, these things I've just described may happen to you. But I want you to understand that if you want me to own up to knowing you, you've got to own up to knowing me, even though it may mean that these things I've just described may happen. It's interesting, as you look through the Gospels, you'll find examples and expressions of where people believed in Jesus, but they did it secretly. You can find an example in John chapter 7, verse 13, where the people are kind of trying to decide who Jesus is and what He's all about. And some believe that He's evil. Some believe that He was a false prophet and so forth. But there were others that believed that He was at least a good man, maybe a prophet. And some even believed that maybe He was the Messiah. But they wouldn't talk about it openly, the text says, for fear of the Jews. In other words, there were a lot of people as Jesus went about healing and casting out demons and teaching who came to believe that Jesus may be who He claimed to be, but they kept it to themselves because they were afraid of what somebody else might think or what somebody else might say. In John chapter 9, a blind man is healed and they bring in the parents, the Pharisees do, to confirm that the man who was healed had actually been blind. And so they're getting eyewitness testimony from the parents. And the parents, when they're asked, you know, what happened to him, they said, hey, he's a grown man, you ask him. The text goes on to say they were afraid to say anything because they were afraid of the religious leaders and being thrown out of the synagogue. Because they'd been told anybody who follows or believes in Jesus is going to be disfellowshipped from the local synagogue. And so you find folks who are coming to believe things, but they don't want anybody else to know about it. And then if you look over in John chapter 19, verse 38, you're going to find that there's a man named Joseph of Arimathea who believed in Jesus, but the text says he basically did so in secret for fear of the Jews. But then you see here in John 19 his coming out party, if you will. Because this man who had been a believer in silence comes out and requests the body of the Jesus who's just been crucified. That's about as public as you can get. He goes from doing it in secret because he's afraid of what the religious leaders might say. But when Jesus dies on that cross, he makes a decision. I'm not going to keep what I believe secret anymore. I am going to ask for the body of Jesus. And I'm going to own up in the presence of this community to the fact that I follow and believe in the man they put on a cross. That's what Jesus is asking us to do. And my guess is there are some folks maybe in this auditorium this morning who believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of the living God, but when it comes to expressing it publicly, we've not done so for a various number of reasons, for different fears. Maybe we're afraid of what somebody in this auditorium will say or think. Maybe we're afraid of what a family member will say or think. Maybe we're afraid of what somebody at work or somebody we play golf with will say or think. Jesus says, if you want me to tell others I know you, then you've got to be willing to tell others that you know and believe in me. Having talked about confession, next he's going to talk about confrontation. When we think about Jesus, usually we think about peace. In fact, the angels described that when He came into the world in the Gospel of Luke, that He would bring peace to the earth. And the reality is, if all human beings would learn to live and act like Jesus, peace would reign on the earth. If people would treat their neighbor like Jesus, I believe if all people would do that, wars would come to an end. But the wars rage on because people, there are people in the world who don't live and love and act like Jesus. And so we think of Jesus as the Prince of Peace, and He is. But we fail to realize that Jesus doesn't want curiosity seekers. Have you ever noticed in the ministry of Jesus, and we've talked about this before, that Jesus, at times when the crowds are flocking to Him, almost seems to be trying to run them off. And the reason for that is Jesus is not after curiosity. And Jesus is not after crowds. Jesus is after commitment and transformed hearts. And so Jesus says, I came to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a man's enemies will be the members of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. It's interesting that Jesus struggled with this in His own family. John chapter 7 and verse 5 says His own brothers did not believe in Him. And you can go to Mark chapter 3. Jesus had been teaching and healing and casting out demons, and He was so busy and there were so many people thronging around Him, He couldn't even stop and eat. His family found out about this, and the text says in Mark 3 that they thought He had gone mad. And so they came to get Him. And when they came to arrive where Jesus was with His followers, somebody said, hey, your mom and your brothers and sisters are outside. And He said, who? Who's outside? My mother, my brother, my sisters. Why, they're right here in the room with me. He said, those who are my mother and my brothers and my sisters are those who accept the will of my Father. He knew that some of the members of His family who came to get Him outside were there, not because they thought He was the Messiah, but because they thought He was crazy. They didn't believe that He was who He claimed to be. And so He said, if you want to ask me who my real family is, it's not the brothers standing outside who don't believe in me. It's the brothers and sisters sitting in this room who've forsaken everything because they believe in me. That is my real family. And so for Jesus, His real family consisted of people who put God first in their lives. And so Jesus says, I came to challenge people to make a choice. I came to find out if God was the number one thing in people's lives. Do you love me more than your most important relationships? I want us to think about that right now. Would you give up your spouse for Jesus? Would you give up your children for Jesus? Would you give up the person that you're going to marry or that you're dating for Jesus? Would you give up your mother and your father for Jesus? I've seen folks do all of these things. I've seen children who went as missionaries to the other side of the world knowing that it'd be a long time before they ever saw their parents again and may never see them again. But they went to the other side of the world to preach the gospel in a place where the gospel had not been because they loved God more than their families. I've known of folks who decided to end their marriages or chose not to get married to somebody they were engaged to because as they read through God's Word, they came to realize that marriage was not honored in the sight of God. As we look at ourselves and our own lives, is there anybody in my life that I love more than Jesus Christ? I used to say when I went to college that I was looking for a wife who would love God more than me. And when I found her, I married her. Is that the kind of person that we are? He then says, and he who does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who has found his life will lose it, but he who loses his life for my sake will find it. He sums up really what he's been saying in this whole section by saying, those who follow me must take up their crosses. You see, he begins by talking to the apostles, saying, here's what you're going to have to face, but don't be afraid. But what happens in verses 32 through 39 is he transitions from talking to the apostles to giving us some blanket statements about what he expects of anybody that follows him. And he says, anybody that follows me must be willing to acknowledge before others that they are my followers. Anybody that follows me must love me and will be more committed to me than any other relationship in their lives. And anybody that follows me must be willing to take up their cross. Now, we've heard that expression before. And maybe somewhere along the way you've heard somebody go through a tough time or something bad's happened to them. And maybe they've said something like, well, that's just my cross to bear. The reality is, no problem we can face in this life, no difficulty, no handicap, no struggle that we'll face into this life, really compares to a cross. Because crosses are not neat little trinkets you wear around your neck. Crosses are not something you put on a wall, on a painting, for a decoration. Crosses are what they kill people with. When I wear a cross around my neck, it's kind of like wearing an electric chair pin around my neck. Okay? And you can think about if you were walking around town and you saw somebody with an electric chair pin around their neck. Why have you got an electric chair hanging around your neck? Or maybe we've got a gas chamber painting on the wall of our house. You walk into someone's home, why have you got a gas chamber on the wall of your home? Why have you got a guy strapped to a table and somebody holding a needle about to put him to death? Why have you got that hanging on the wall of your house? See, what happens is the cross has become sterilized to us. For us, it has become a piece of jewelry. It has become something to hang on the wall. It has become something you stick on a bumper sticker on the bumpers of our cars. But for Jesus, it was a place where you died. It was a place where you bled. It was a place where you struggled for every breath. It was a place where they ripped the flesh of your hands and your feet. It was a place where you faced total and absolute humility and helplessness. That's what crosses were for. And I think I've told you the story before. Back when I was a youth minister in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, I remember looking out the window there in the main church office, and there was a guy going down the street carrying a cross. The problem with his cross was that he had training wheels on it so it would roll easily, and it had a cushion right here in the crook that he put it on his shoulder. There were no training wheels on Jesus' cross. There was no cushion where he could carry it on his shoulder. It was rough, splintered wood on which he would die. In other words, when Jesus says, take up your cross, he's not saying, I want you to go through some tough times every now and then and be able to say, that's my cross to bear. He's saying, I want you to die to yourself for me. Today is Sack the Pulpit Day. And I think it's very easy to sack the pulpit if we've already put ourselves in the sack. If I've already given myself to Jesus, then bringing 5, 10, 15, or however many sacks of groceries, that's very easy to do because I've already died. And the reality is that every church building ought to be filled with dead people. People who have not only died to their sins, but have died to themselves. And when I've died to myself, then I will do anything for God because I don't need any of that stuff I'm going to give up for Him because I'm already dead. I remember an expression one time in the video series, Band of Brothers, and there was a young private, a Private Blythe, who was scared to death of going into battle. And there was a commander by the name of Spears who was talked to him one day, and he said, I can tell your problem is that you have hope. He said, we're all already dead. It's just a matter of when we're going to die. And he says, when you finally get to that point, you'll be okay. Does that make sense? This commander was absolutely fearless. And I don't remember if his rank was sergeant. I think it was actually lieutenant. But he was saying basically the reason he was so fearless in battle was because he kind of had the view, I'm already dead. I'm going to die before this is over. So it's just a matter of when the bullet comes. So why be afraid? I'm already dead. And he says, when you get to that point, then you're ready to be a soldier. Well, I think we do live a little differently because I do think we live with hope. But I think the reality is we're different kind of people as Christians when we kind of had that attitude of, I'm already dead. So I'm just waiting for my bullet. So it doesn't matter what I have to give up. It doesn't matter what I have to do without. Beat me, I don't care. Throw me in prison, I don't care. Put me on trial, I don't care. I'm already dead. I'm already dead to myself, and I'm already dead for Jesus Christ. He's asking them to make a choice. He's saying, as he talks about confession, it's me or your reputation. Are you more concerned about what I think about you than you are with what others think about you? When he talks about confrontation, he says it's me or your relationships. Am I more important than the most important people that you have around you? And then he says, it's me or your life, as he thinks about crucifixion. I want to challenge each of us as we think about this. What Jesus is doing is he's giving us a revival of commitment and a revival of discipleship. Would you take out your psalm books and turn to the hymn of encouragement? See, in our world, in our culture, we have a mistaken concept of what it means to be a Christian. It's somewhat like joining a social club. You go to some gatherings every once in a while, you make a lot of friends, you'll know a lot of people around town, and that's really great and wonderful, and I do think you have a lot of friends. You have a new family, and you do meet a lot of people around town if you accept Jesus Christ and give your life to Him. But he said, becoming a Christian is not really like joining a country club. What it's really like is going and asking if you can be on death row. It's Jesus saying, here I am on my cross, and I've left one beside me for you, and I've left one on this side for you. So please, please come forward, find your cross, and let's die together. In other words, Jesus is saying, give me everything you've got. But what he's also saying is, in return, he will give us everything he has. You see, if I just look at it in terms of what I'm giving up, it may seem like a lot. But when I look at it in terms of what he gave up on the cross and what he's willing to give me in eternity, then it takes on a whole different perspective. You see, I'm not really giving up anything. I'm going to end up giving a whole lot more. He just wants to know if I love Him enough and want to be with eternity with Him enough to give up everything I have. So our question is, as we sing this invitation song, is where does Jesus rank in our lives? Do we love Him enough to act upon our faith and be baptized into Jesus Christ for the forgiveness of our sins? Do we love Him enough to admit things that we've done wrong publicly and ask for the prayers of the folks in this room? Do we love Him enough to make changes and start owning up to the fact that we're His children at the workplace and at the playplace? If we can help you in your relationship with God, come, let's share some crosses together as we stand and sing.